Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servididio, and I'm your host. Well, tonight I have an amazing show for us, a show that's been long overdue, that I've been really getting a lot of questions on, and really been a show that I really wanted to work on and address. Tonight I have Laura Chapanis with me. She's an actor, a screenwriter, and a producer for her movie Acceptance. Laura is a mother struggling with her son's diagnosis of Asperger's. Laura, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor and a privilege.
Thank you. As when I first met you at the festival, I said I've been waiting so long to come in contact with someone in the field of autism, also, or someone who's encountered it and someone who's worked with it. And I watched your film about a month ago, and it was so powerful and really touched on so many amazing points. And I think a message to give to the community, to parents, to people suffering with Asperger's. How did you come about with this film?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I was an actor for many, many years. I did a lot of off-Broadway things. I did independent movies. It's something that's just a passion of mine, always has been. And I left the theater to have a family. And I came to a point in my life where it was like, it's either now or never. So I put that to the side, and I was okay with it. And, you know, during the time I had my son, I was always still had that in the back of my mind that I would like to get back into it someday. And the opportunity presented itself for me to be in a couple of independent movies, go to some festivals, and as I was watching short films, I had a thought, you know, I could do that. You know, why can't I write a short film? So that was something that I had been, you know, kind of mulling over for many years. And it, you know, occurred to me that if I wanted to tell a story, that it would have to be something that I felt would be honest, worth telling, and that I could be in the film because, you know, as an actor, I was looking for something that I could do myself. So I just basically, the first rule of writing is write about what you know. And my son had been diagnosed at age 7 with Asperger's syndrome.
Wow. How was that for you when you first got that diagnosis?
Well, I show it in my short film, Acceptance. It was devastating. It was devastating. No parent wants to hear that A word, you know, autism. And just like in the film, which takes the viewer through, the stages of grief that someone goes through when something difficult happens in life, the first stage is shock. And that's exactly, you know, what I went through. You know, you go through that shock, like, what? No. You know, and then, of course, denial is in there as well. And I had done a lot of reading because my son, at about 2 years old, you know, it's my only child. When you start meeting other people and having little play dates, you start to notice the differences that these kids are talking, they're putting two words together. You know, what about my son? What about my child? So, you know, meeting people and talking to people, they start talking, saying things to you, like early intervention, getting him evaluated. And these are very scary for a parent. Nobody wants to have somebody evaluate your child. You're so protective of that little person. It's a very challenging and difficult thing to do. But I put my feelings aside, and I, you know, had a discussion with my husband, and we agreed to have him evaluated at 2. So they come to the house, early intervention comes in, and it's very difficult to describe, Alexa, how it feels when people come into your home and they start basically judging your child, asking them to do tasks and complete tasks, like, you know, do this puzzle. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he can't sit still for 2 seconds. How's he going to do that puzzle? So, you know, because of that, I did a lot of reading about things, and I read about Asperger's. Of course, I immediately said, that's not my son. And it turned out eventually that was one of the diagnoses, among other things. You know, my son also has ADHD. And a lot of these things overlap. And it's almost like a mosaic. Like, we all are. We're a mosaic. But the bottom line is, how can we help this person to be successful? And so that's why diagnosis is helpful, as opposed to a label. It's not a label as much as how can we help now? How can we give services? How can we move forward?
Yes. I work with a lot of parents and also some children who are on the autism spectrum. And I know it's such, in the beginning, such a hard struggle, and still as it goes through, but finding that, you know, getting that diagnosis, you know, sitting with it, acknowledging it, learning to live with it and process it, and then finding out, okay, where do we move from here? And I think so many times it can be masked by so many other things. So sometimes some people think, oh, you know, the child is just acting out and needs more discipline, or maybe the child just doesn't know how to focus. And it runs so much deeper than, you know, behavioral issues. And I think sometimes people get so confused or almost shy away from what's going on. And it's, you know, understandable that this is what happens sometimes, and being able to accept, okay, where can we go from here?
Exactly. And, you know, when I wrote my film, it's a drama based on a true story. So it's not a documentary, but all of the feelings in the film are true. And, you know, you mentioned denial, and it's extremely powerful and a safe place to be. But it doesn't help my son. So, you know, and I was there. My husband and I were there. Oh, that's not my son. That's not him. That, you know, it's so easy to look at. Autism is different than any other kind of a disorder, because there's no blood test. You know, when I first heard the word red flag, that was one of the first things that someone who came over to help him after early intervention, she had mentioned, I see some red flags. What does that mean? What does that mean? And she said, well, autism. And I felt like somebody punched me in the face. And so now I'm like, what do I do now? She said, well, you should try to get an appointment with a developmental pediatrician. And I'm thinking, well, can they give me a blood test? Or she's like, no, it's just they're going to ask you a lot of questions. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not doing that. That was my first thought. I'm not doing that. No, that's not him. But after I sat with it, like you said, I had to sit with it and let it marinate. And I get on the phone the next day, and I call some developmental pediatricians, and I'm getting an appointment 3 down the road. And I want answers now. I need to know today. So that was really painful. And you know, I'm the kind of person that when I want to do something, I do it. And to tell me I have to wait to help my son was devastating, to say the least.
And I think what I really love, what you incorporate in the film, is those genuine emotions. There was no sugarcoating it or anything like that. You really saw the raw emotions, the true life. And I also, with the integration of the stages of grief, I so much talk about on my show with, you know, death of a marriage, a relationship, an illness, that it's a grieving process. There's different stages of grief to go through, and that's normal to feel all those different feelings. And sometimes they don't go in the same exact order for each person.
Right.
There's no set time. Okay, 6 months for anger, 5 months for
right.
this. Each person in each case is so different.
Absolutely. And I still go through these stages with each milestone in life. For example, you know, I'll be outside and I see a bunch of boys playing football together. And I go through this mini version of the stages of grief, grieving the fact that that's not what's going to happen for our family. That's, you know, the typical things that typical children go through and do. And I grieve that. I do. Since it's ongoing, that's another, like, message that I have to learn and I want to share is, it's not just a destination. It's not like, okay, I've accepted it. I'm good. It's totally ongoing. And I still get moments where I feel like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is my life. And, like you said, and I float back and forth through all of the stages of grief They're I don't stay there as long, and it's not as intense, but they're a part of my life. As is for everyone. You know, we all have difficult things in life that we all go through. And there's always someone who has it worse. But that doesn't diminish my pain and my feeling.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also the important message that it is ongoing. There isn't a quick fix. It doesn't mean it's going, you know, that your life is now going to be this horrible thing for the rest of your life. But it's an ongoing type of grieving process and an acceptance process, as if there was a death of a loved one or a marriage. And it takes time to come to the different stages. And I think sometimes people want to rush through it or get that answer right away, which is normal, which is human. We don't want to sit here and suffer and be in pain. We want the answer. We want to move forward. But with sometimes with things like this, and it's something in life that needs processing, and also to be able to do it, which is hard, without judgment, without judging yourself, without having those feelings of guilt and a stigma. It's really being vulnerable, which, you know, I know it's easier said than done, but it's really, I think, important for the healing process.
That's part of the grieving process, is that guilt that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine, you know, any mother not feeling guilt like I did. And the question popped into my mind, what did I do wrong? Did I not eat the right things? And was I too old when I got pregnant? And you start, was it the vaccinations? Whatever, we just start to go into that place of guilt. And it is, like you said, part of the grieving process. But to stay there too long is not going to help anybody. And you know what, Alessa? The bottom line is, and this is, I say this in the end of the film, he's still my son. You know, when I first heard the diagnosis, I can remember waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And as I'm walking to the bathroom, in my head, this is what I hear, autism, autism, autism. It was like this horrific word that I saw and heard that I could not get out of my head. And today I can say that I see my son and I just see Jake. That's it. I don't feel that way anymore, but I went through that. I had to get through that to be where I am today, to be able to talk to you and to be so open about it and to not have the shame, but to be an advocate for not only my son, but for people on the spectrum and for other mothers, and to be there as a voice of hope. And my message is that there's so much hope. These are just people. My son is a person with feelings and hopes and dreams. And I'm going to do, my husband and I are going to do whatever we have to do to help him achieve that. And, mm-hmm. and you know, he's happy. He's okay with who he is. You know, he doesn't want to be anything else other than himself. So people like Temple Grandin, who I had, you know, the opportunity to meet and hear her speak, she loves the way she thinks. She loves who she is. She wouldn't change it if she had the opportunity. And that's a lesson for me, you know. Like, what's so great about being typical anyway?
Yes. And I've worked with a few children that are on the spectrum. And, I mean, there's a brilliance. It's amazing how the mind works and functions. And I think there isn't just one face to it. It's so many different facets, and I think really being able to, you know, as you said, to sit with it and to say, okay, that this is what it is, and this is who my son is, and being able to grow from it and to move forward. And I think so many times, you know, as you said, parents think, you know, what did I do wrong, or is there something mm-hmm. else I can do, which is normal for people to kind of want to do that. And it's a very hard thing to have to sit with, but I think it's something to say, you know what, where can we go from here? During filming, how was that for you? Did you feel things being triggered? I mean, it must have been pretty tough to kind of relive those first moments from the beginning.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. You know, I ended up having to produce the film as well, which I didn't really want to do that, but that's what happened. So I had to wear a lot of hats. And I wish I could have just focused on my performance as an actor and relaxed a little bit, because I had to be producer as well. It kind of, I guess it was a blessing, because it kept me, so I couldn't really overthink what was happening until we were shooting. But sitting in that, the scene with the psychologist's office was very difficult, and it did bring me back. And even more so, each time I watch the film, every single time I watch it, I get emotional. It does bring me back. It brings me back. And I do see the growth, though, that in my son and in myself. And that is where the hope comes in, that there's so much hope. You know, no matter where we are in our journey, you know, the pain makes us stronger. As you know, cliche as that sounds, it's the truth. And from my pain has come tremendous growth and learning.
Yes. And you saw that in the film. It was so amazing to take that journey with you and also to know that this was your story when I was watching it, and to see the growth through it and see you, you know, kind of experiencing it and moving forward and going through the different stages. It must have been, you know, bittersweet, but I think it's a way of getting your powerful message through. And also I think brings up another, you know, topic that for actors, it's really hard to have to put yourself in these roles. If it's your story or if it's not your story, you really have to go to a certain place of truth, of pain, to, you know, to capture what's going on.
Absolutely. And that scene in the library was very important to me because I remember during the time shortly after the diagnosis, I'm the kind of person that I like to get information. I like to read. And I wanted to find some books. So I went to our local library, and I remember looking in the section under autism and being just devastated that that's where I was. That's what I was doing. And it was a quiet day in the library, and I felt I was alone, but I felt so lonely. And just looking at those books and just crying by myself. So I wanted to make that scene, when we shot it for the film, genuine. So I did have to go to that place where it was very painful, and because I wanted it to be real for the audience. So that was really difficult because, you know, they're setting up the cameras and they're trying to get everything, the lighting correct, and I was in the corner with headphones on listening to music that is very sad for me, and I had lost my dad not that long ago from that day of shooting. So that pain was very raw, and, you know, we had to shoot it again and again and again, so that was difficult, but I think, you know, what you see in the film, it was worth it, absolutely.
Yes, I agree. It was very, very powerful, and I think it also brings up the feeling of loneliness when something tragic happens, when there's a diagnosis, when there's something that, you know, news we get, and that feeling of being all alone and being, you know, lost. And so many people can get stuck in that place. And I find in my private practice, or even in the clinic I work at, so many people, it's so hard to kind of move past that. But it's having the hope, and it's having, you know, getting up one more time, just moving forward a little bit, and having encouragement to get through that moment.
You know, that word hope, it's such a little tiny word, but it's everything. A few weeks ago, we were going through another difficult time, and, you know, there's going to be times where things are kind of smooth sailing, and then there's going to be difficulty. And it was a really difficult time, and I was feeling really hopeless. And I was in my car, and I had gotten lost, and I started crying, and I said to myself, hope, that I'm just hoping. And then I said, stupid hope, because I felt hopeless. But the good news is, I went to sleep that night, and the next morning I woke up, and it's a new day, and I started with feeling hopeful, and I do the best I can. And, you know, we got through the tough time again, and, you know, things are looking better again. So it's just life, but sometimes, you know, things can be very, very, very dark. But just like the weather, it doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. And, you know, to reach out and ask for help, there's so much help out there, and there's so many other families that are going through this. And for me, that's one of the first things I did was I you know, when we first found out, I reached out to another mom who was going through the same thing. Because who better to understand what I'm going through than someone who's doing it? And to me, that is imperative, and that is so, and find somebody else. You know,
yes.
I'm always there to help and you know, share my story with people. That's very important.
It's finding the support. I know sometimes when you're going through something so horrible, you're feeling all alone, the last thing you want to do is go talk to somebody or explain what's going on. But
right.
It's so detrimental that you do reach out, have a team, have, you know, a mentor. Is it your friend? Is it a priest? Is it a teacher? Someone to kind of be able to, you know, they don't have to fix it, just to listen. Sometimes it's so powerful to have someone just listen. You know, and so many times in my sessions, you know, clients will be like, why do these things happen? It's not fair. It's painful. Why do these things, you know, why is this a part of life? And I don't have the answer why it's a part of life, but I can help you move forward with hope and with processing it. I can't take all the pain. I can't take the pain away, but I think it's being able to say, okay, let me grieve this. And let me process it, and being able to pay it back, to pay it forward, you know, to help somebody else, I find is so empowering and so healing too, to be able to reach out to a parent who's first found out that, you know, their child has a diagnosis, or, you know, or to go to a group, or to just to be there for somebody. It really changes somebody's life.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, the last thing people want to do, and I get that, is go to a support group. And you know what? You don't even have to do that. Just asking people that you know, or, we all know somebody who has a child with autism. We, you know, in our network of people that we know. And I work as a fitness instructor, and one of the other fitness instructors, I knew her sister had a son on the autism spectrum just from talking to her. So that's the first person I contacted. I said, can I have your sister's phone number? And would it be okay if I called her? And she said, absolutely. So it was something that simple, that I could do it from my home. And I invited her over, and she came over, and I met her, and we had the kids played in the backyard. And it was, I'll never forget that, how much she helped me. Just to have that other woman, you know, of course I have my husband, but from, you know, from woman to woman, it's different from mother to mother. We have a different grieving process that we go through than the men do. And I think it's really important for women to support each other. We need that.
Yes. Yes. And to be able to be there for each other. How would you say, if you could, how did your husband handle this, process it? How was it for him?
Another great question. At the very beginning, the very, very first time we heard the word red flag, he was 3 years old, or two and a half. He said something to somebody at work, and that person at work was a guy, and he said, oh, don't get evaluated because then he'll be labeled, you know, and all that nonsense. So when he said that to me, I got freaked out by it, and I actually had set up an appointment with early intervention, and I canceled it. Taking a walk around the block, I bumped into one of my neighbors, talk about, you know, coincidence, who had been through the process, and she said, oh, my God, that was the best thing that we ever did. You should not have canceled that appointment. And I went home, and I rescheduled it. So initially, it was denial, initially. But, you know, my husband is wonderful. We've been married 26 years, and he is extremely supportive. And, you know, there's a possibility that he may be on the autism spectrum as well. They do say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, so he might have some mild Asperger's going on, too. So now I understand him a little bit better.
Yes, it just opens up a different stage of awareness. I think it also brings about men and women will process things differently. And I think in a marriage, you know, so many times I see couples too where there's something that happens that can either make or break the marriage. And this is something to really be able to, even though it's tough and it's easier said than done, to be able to bond together with, you know, with the sadness, with the pain, with the confusion, and to be able to kind of go through it together and support each other through it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. But what I noticed for my husband is, you know, he, okay, this is what it is, and he's ready to move on. For me, my grieving process is totally different. I need to cry about it and then cry about it some more and then cry about it some more and then talk about it and then cry about it. So
mm-hmm.
he, that's not his process. So for me to just, what I did by reaching out to other women helped me to get what I needed and not to be upset with his process. And then that's why I think reaching out is really important to have that to keep the marriage together. Now, you know, Alexa, they say that the divorce rate for people, for couples who have a child with a disability is 80%.
Wow. Tough.
So, yeah, so it's, you know, and we, I know I'm proud of what we have and what we've built together. You know, I really am.
Yes. It really shows dedication and support and resilience and a real strength to move forward.
Yeah, he's always been very supportive. He, you know, because as the mother, I'm the one that takes him to the doctor's appointments. I'm the one that, you know, sets up the therapies. I'm the one that takes him to social skills and horseback riding. And, you know, and he works full-time to pay for all of this stuff. And he doesn't question the choices. You know, he trusts that, you know, that I'm doing what's best for our son, and he's a great dad. And it's so important that I have his support, you know, and even for the film, like he was so supportive of me doing this film, and we shot it in my house, and, you know, he's come to every film festival that my film got in, and, you know, I can count on him 100%, and that is invaluable.
Yes, and it's been in a lot of film festivals. There was the New Hope Film Festival, the Golden Door International Film Festival.
Hoboken International Film Festival.
Yes. I mean, really spreading the message. What do people say after the film when they come up and speak to you? What do you find really touches them that people will say?
A lot of people say, who know me, say, I had no idea that you were going through this. And then people who don't know me just say how moved they were by the story. And I've had people on the autism spectrum come up to me and just thank me so much and tell me how much they love the film. It's just, it's very humbling as, you know, as a filmmaker, and it's, you know, my first film, to have people be so receptive and really enjoy the movie. And, you know, that's a dream come true. You know, and what's kind of ironic is, I left the theater and I left acting so I can have a family. The story of my son and my journey is what brought me back into the industry. So it's...
Yes, it's meant to be.
Kind of amazing. Mm-hmm.
It is. It definitely is. I think it just reaches so many different levels through the film and really sheds light on what's going on. What would you say is the most difficult thing for you having a son with Asperger's? Is it something daily? Is it something that happens once in a while? Something that you really find that is tough for you?
Let's see, where should I begin? The mornings are hard, you know, and acceptance. I mean, which is absurd because that's the name of my film, and I still struggle with accepting him for who he is. And I think every parent can identify with this. Our job as parents is to try and help our children to become productive adults. But where do I draw the line between trying to help someone and trying to help him and then trying to change somebody? You know, he is who he is, and it's difficult for me sometimes to accept the way he can behave, the way he can be, the way he can speak. And I have to work on my patience. I really have to work on my patience. And that's really, really my biggest challenge, is being more patient, being more calm. And I'm not a calm person at all. So it's really difficult.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, if you could, for your husband, what do you think his biggest struggle is?
You know, watching his son go through difficult things, and not being able to protect him from that, or it's difficult when you see them in a social situation and other people might not be reacting to or treating them the way that you wish they would, and that's really painful to watch and to not want to intervene and do something.
Yes, because I find so many times, you know, people who are not familiar with it or have any, you know, education on the spectrum, on Asperger's, autism, feels, oh, the child is not behaving, the parents don't know how to parent the child is not listening. It's really nothing to do with that. You know, it might look like that on the surface, but I think it really, you know, I was hoping also for this show to really shed light on that and awareness and education, that it's not about those things. To really, before you judge someone or think you can put your opinion in onto a situation or an event, to really take a step back and really say, okay, you know, I'm not walking in those that person's shoes. I don't know what they've gone through, so maybe I shouldn't jump to an opinion so quickly, and to give some grace and take a step back.
Absolutely. You know, even people who do know about autism can sometimes, their expectations are too high. And sometimes, and I'm sure there are people who, some of your listeners will be able to relate to this, family, even though they know about the diagnosis and they think they know what they know, and then you have a family event and things happen, sometimes the compassion is not there, or the expectation is too high that they set on the child. And that's heartbreaking. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have difficulty with family, like when they go to a Thanksgiving, or, you know, sometimes kids on the spectrum have meltdowns. And the meltdown is like a child's version of a panic attack. Nobody wants it to happen. You can't help it. You feel horrible about it, but you can't stop it. And it looks like a tantrum, but it's not. It's an overload, a sensory overload, and their system cannot handle it. So people are so quick to, you know, to think, oh, look at that child, how they're behaving. You know, think about if anyone's ever had a panic attack, what that feels like. I've had one on an airplane flight. I thought the plane was going down, and when it was over, I was embarrassed how I acted, but I couldn't stop it. And that's how the child feels. So family can be very, very difficult, you know, because we expect our family to support us, and sometimes they let us down. They don't live the life we live, so they don't really get it. And that's another thing to accept, that's, you know, we either have to educate them a little bit more or just accept that they're just not going to get it and be okay with that.
You brought up a good point. I mean, if someone thinks of who's experienced an anxiety attack, a panic attack, could imagine the fear, that how it takes over you, your heart's racing, you feel like it's the end of the world. The last thing you need is someone coming up and telling you, just be quiet, behave yourself. Why are you overreacting? You're a bad child. You're not, it almost triggers it, or getting angry with you and raising your voice. It can kind of trigger and intensify the anxiety. And
absolutely.
Make it a lot
it's
worse.
Like being punished for having a panic attack. You know, and unless you know better, you know, at the beginning, that when this was occurring, you know, that was my first, you know, I'll punish. He needs to be punished because his behavior's bad. But because I educated myself and because of a lot of therapy, you know, my son sees a psychologist, I see a psychologist, you know, for many, many years. You know, I have learned that it is, he can't help it. It's as if, you know, you're sitting in a room, and if the floor drops out from underneath you, that's what it feels like when it's an overload. And you can't punish somebody for that. That, first of all, it's not going to work, and it's just going to make them feel bad. They're still going to have them. You know, they will get less and less, hopefully. I've noticed that. But and you can't discipline a child on the spectrum the same way you discipline a typical child, and people don't get that either. I've actually had a family member say to me, "Do you ever punish him?" And I was, you know, my first reaction was anger. Like, where's this coming from? Why? Because he had a meltdown. You think I should punish him? But you know what? People aren't going to get my life, and that's okay. I need to be okay with that. That's me. That's my acceptance.
Yes.
Because I can't
There's so
fight
many
the
different
world.
Levels.
I can't fight the whole world. I can't. It's too exhausting.
It is. I mean, and unfortunately, there's always somebody out there with something to say or an opinion. I mean, there's just so many layers, I think, parents have to work through with the marriage, with the son, with the child, with the outside world, with school, with behavior. I mean, there's just so many different layers and different things to become aware of. What do you find works for you with your son for helping him, assisting him, maybe decreasing some of the symptoms? What works for you?
Well, we live in a great school district, so he gets a lot of services. And, I needed to let go of what I thought he should be, because he's very, very smart, and stop pushing, and let him be where he's comfortable, and he can learn at his own pace, which might not be the pace of the other seventh graders right now, but be okay with that. I need to be okay with that because it's not about me. So having a lot of support, that helped a lot. We have a very structured schedule in our house, and we keep to that. It's definitely helped him. You know, we still are learning on a daily basis. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm winging it from one day to the next. But he says things to me, you know, I that blow my mind. You know, when he sees me getting upset, sometimes he'll come up to me and he says, "Mommy, you need to take some deep breaths." And I'm like, but he's right. So I want to model good behavior. So I stop, even though that's the last thing I want to do is take a deep breath, and I'll do it. So he's getting the information. He might not know how to use it appropriately all the time, but it's getting in there. And we do social skills outside of school as well as in school. And we try everything. You know, I try to expose him to as much as possible to figure out what his thing is. And one of the best things that we ever did was we participate in Special Olympics, which is a great place to meet other families who have children, you know, either on the spectrum or children with disabilities, but other parents who get it. And it's an amazing organization, and they provide sports for free to families with children, you know, with any kind of disabilities, emotional disabilities, intellectual disabilities.
Wow. So it's a great, great organization. I think it's also, you know, teaching the children, exposing them to peer interaction, learning how to interact with other people, you know, working on projects, doing a sports activity, something that children really, you know, be able to experience themselves. Because I find so many times parents that I work with, to be protected, they kind of want to shelter their child or keep them home or don't want, you know, because, you know, people can be cruel and they want to shelter them. But I think sometimes by having them involved in these other activities and being able to learn on a daily basis, to be around other people, to, you know, problem solve, is really important for the child's growth and development.
And to be part of a team where each child, these kids accept each other for who they are, and they all have their unique quirks and their idiosyncrasies. But to see it, Alexa, and to see how these kids embrace my son and they high-five him and they work together as a team, and some of the kids on the team can't even kick the soccer ball, while others, you know, are more athletic. One thing that a couple weeks ago we had a tournament, was a soccer tournament. It was in Lawrenceville. And there's a girl on our team who has never, ever kicked a soccer ball. And her parents and were screaming and cheering for her. All they wanted was for her to kick the ball. All they wanted. And I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, she's out there. It's a beautiful day. She's running around. Who cares if she, like, does it really matter if she kicks the soccer ball? But then here I am, me and my husband, we want our son to be a little bit more aggressive because he's, you know, he can kick the ball, but he's scared. Then there's the other parent whose kid's really, really good, but she feels like he's distracted. And it just made me realize that no matter where our kids are, we always want them to do a little bit more. But wouldn't it be great if we could just accept them for who they are and where they are. And whether they kick the ball or not, who cares? Now,
wow.
She never did kick the ball. And I really wanted her to for them, not for her. She didn't care. So it taught me a lot that day about letting go a little bit more of that little bit of a push that all parents, no matter with Special Olympics or regular soccer, just to let it go.
Yes, definitely. And that actually leads us into one of our first questions I've gotten from a listener. Dear Insight into Healing, my son is out of control. He does not listen and he cannot focus on anything for more than a few minutes. I feel like I'm losing my mind. What's going on? What would you say, Laura, if this parent came to you?
Wow. Well, I'd like to know how old the child is. And there could be a lot going on. You know, I mean, I would definitely, you know, seek some help, seek some professional help to get someone who is not so close to the child to do an evaluation. You know, that's the first step is to because this out of control behavior could be maybe a stimulus overload. Maybe the child is on the spectrum. Maybe they're not. But to get some professional help, absolutely. So you don't feel so overwhelmed. You know, I remember at the beginning, before I got help, Alexa, I felt like it was all on my shoulders as, you know, the stay-at-home mom. And when we first got help, I felt some of that get off of me because I knew someone was coming over to help me. And to reach out and get, whether it's a psychologist, I mean, I would start with a psychologist, finding a child psychologist, depending on the age of the child, and get some help, you know, go make that appointment. It's just invaluable. My son's psychologist has helped me so much. I mean, there's a character based on her in my film. And we just saw her today. We just came from there today. I still learn from her because I sit in on the sessions. We sit in on it. And I still learn so much from her.
I think that's what's so important, too. By reaching out for help does not mean that you can't do it and that there's something wrong with you because you can't fix it. This is meant not for one person to fix. It's not to be fixed. It's for a team. It's a sign of strength to be able to be vulnerable, to go and get professional help. It's really, in the long run, so beneficial.
I have learned so much. It is. It's like getting an education. There's so much that we don't know. So to ask for help is really the beginning of an education process. You know, so for this mom, and I hope that she gets the help that she needs and gets the answers that she's looking for. And to just read as much as she can and to know that, it's not always going to be this way and that there is hope.
As my dad would always say, you know, if there was a difficult time, he always would say, you know, this too shall pass. It's something to keep in the back of your mind. That, you know, the bad times will pass. They're the ebb and flows. And to be able to work through it, and I think part of life is, for some reason, is to be able to sustain yourself through the difficult times and to know that they will pass and that there will be positive times. There will be happiness. And to be able to find your peace within the chaos and finding comfort that you're allowed to, that you deserve it. To be, you know, at peace and find comfort. And I know this mother says, you know, I feel like I'm losing my mind. You're not alone. A lot of people feel like that in this position.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people feel like that with children who don't have a diagnosis or if they're
right.
in a relationship that's not working. And to be able to say, okay, let me see where I can go to reach for help. And sometimes when you get an outside person, a third party, they're able to shed light or give tools or advice on things from a different perspective. So it's, you know, it's hard sometimes to work, as I say, therapists, you know, don't give therapy to your own family or to your own friends because you're personally involved. So it's different to reach out to someone who's not personally involved, who can really say, okay, this is what's going on. Let's try to work on this and really see what works. Because I think it's trial and error. Each person is so different. So, you know, what might work for one person might not work for the other, but I think that's what it's all about. And not to become discouraged if you hit a bump in the road or if you go back a few steps. that's okay. It doesn't mean there's a failure. There doesn't mean that something, you know, is not working. It's just being able to kind of get through those bumps in the road and keep going.
Right, and you reminded me of another really good point. A lot of times the first therapist that you meet with might not be your therapist for life. And to not give up, because, you know, it's kind of like a relationship. You know, you don't always click, and that's okay, but please don't give up. Keep trying until you find that person that you're like, oh, you get my son, or you get my daughter, or you get me. It's worth it, because it took me a while to find my personal therapist and the one my son has now, and I'm so glad that I didn't give up. You know,
yeah,
and there's one other thing
work.
I was thinking of that I don't want to forget to say. You know, if I have any regrets, Alexa, it's I worried so much about my son, and I wish I spent less time worrying and more time loving and accepting and enjoying him. So to parents out there, we need to, and I mean me included, we need to find more moments that we just accept them and have fun with them, whatever it may be. Like last night I went on YouTube and I found some funny puppy videos, and we watched them together. And so we're laughing and we're watching these cute little funny puppy videos together, because life is so short. It goes by so fast. I mean, looking at a picture of him on my dresser, and he's, you know, a baby, and he's 12 and a half now. So, you know, it goes so quick, and I want to enjoy him, and I want to stop this worrying, because it doesn't do me any good, and it doesn't do him any good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I also, just another point I was just thinking about, what a blessing your son is to your family and to you, but also to us, the community. His power and his strength that we're able to learn from him. We are able to, the compassion, the understanding. It's really powerful. I mean, for my listeners, I can imagine how many people this show is touching. It reaches worldwide. And just for people who are at the point in their life, they feel like giving up, they feel like there's no hope, your son is changing lives. His story is going to be a legacy that moves forward and heals people, which I think is really an important thing for parents to think about. It's just the power and the message that this can bring, and the impact it can have on people.
You know, while we're at the Golden Door International Film Festival, I had the pleasure of speaking to a group of moms who had children on the spectrum, and there was another speaker with me, and he was in his early 20s, and he had autism. And what an amazing young man. And when you just said that about my son, you know, it reminds me that, you know, right now, and for other parents out there, there are kids, but they're really the world's kids and the world's people, and they will go out into the world someday, however, in whatever capacity that may be. And they have value and worth and purpose and a message and passion. So they're going to be out there and hopefully, you know, live the lives that they're meant to live. You know, and like
yeah.
You said, it's they are. It is very powerful. It gets me emotional to think about it.
It does. It's just a very touching, powerful message, and just it's a very amazing, amazing thing. What's coming up for you for acceptance for your career? Anything on the horizon?
Well, actually, I am thinking about I've started writing. I'm thinking about making acceptance into, you know, like a dramatic series, and either, you know, and adding a couple other characters that also have children on the spectrum. So making it a show about moms who have kids on the spectrum. And that's what I'd like to do next, you know. So I'm just bring for some, you know, to maybe get some funds together, get some a nice group of people together who, you know, want to work on it. And I'd really like to work with some women, you know, director maybe, or have someone help me to write. So I really want, you know, I like the idea of women supporting women. It's, you know, the film industry is mostly men, you know, written by, things are written by men, they're produced by men, they're directed by men. And so the stories are male-driven, and the female characters are always just like a byproduct, or, you know, just, oh, the pretty girl or a secretary, or there's not a lot of really substantial roles for women, and that's kind of one of the reasons I wrote my own film. And mm-hmm. it also, you know, doing this project has opened my eyes to the fact that, wow, there's, you know, there's a very small percentage of women in that industry. So I think we need to support each other.
That would be amazing. How can people get in touch with you or follow you on what's going on?
I have a Facebook page for the film. It's called Acceptance, the Movie. So if they search that in Facebook, it would be great if people would like my page. And they could, you know, message me on that page if they would like, you know. You know, another thing I have been doing and I'd like to continue to do is to show the film and then do a Q&A. You know, I'd like to get into some conferences, some either autism conferences, any kind of teaching conferences to help spread the message about the, what the family goes through, what the parents feel. You know, I think it's, you know, important for people who work in the industry to understand, you know, a lot of times when they see us moms coming, whether it's in the school or whatever, they see, you know, we put our game face on. They don't understand the pain that's behind that face. So, you know, we have to put our armor on because we've been through so much. So I think it's important for, you know, social workers and teachers. It would help them, I think, to have a little bit more compassion and to understand sometimes why we can be this, you know, oh, here comes that angry mom again. You know, that we're not just angry moms. We have to fight for everything for our kids. We're used to that fight. But behind that angry mom is someone who's been through a lot. You know, so I would love, you know, to just share this with people.
Have you gone to, or would you be thinking about, you know, having a support group for moms? Because I'm, you know, I bet there's something out there like that, but I think that would be so powerful.
You know, I did look into it, and there really wasn't much for Asperger's. There was some for autism. They were, you know, once a month, or it wasn't frequent enough, and it wasn't close enough for me, you know, because we, at the end of the day, we're exhausted. We are done. And I really don't want to drive 45 minutes to an hour. You know, I want to go to bed because I know I have to get up early the next day. So, you mm-hmm. know, I was a little kind of disappointed with what was out there. But that was a while ago because I have, you know, because of Special Olympics, because I speak about it and I've met so many people, you know, I have a network of women, you know, my best friend, her son has autism. You know, the people I associate with, a lot of them have a child on the spectrum because we get each other. So, I, you know, and I do think support groups are really important. I think it's hard for people to get there and to go to them. And especially if they're only once a month, because if you miss one, then you have to wait another whole month.
It definitely needs to be more than once a month. Nothing.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's health, it's better than nothing, but I think you definitely need something.
Right.
Once a week, if people can put in their schedule, I think it's something. It's an ongoing struggle, an ongoing life process, as anything.
Right, and something maybe during the day, you know, because again, like I said, at the end of the day, you know, us, we're done. We are done. Like, I just want to watch The Real Housewives of whatever, and forget,
yes.
you know, forget about for my 1 hour show, and then go to bed. That's it.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It was just so amazing. I've been waiting for so long to do a show on this topic. And if anyone has any questions, you can send them to insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Insight Into Healing. Send me a message. All names and information is confidential. And everyone, thank you so much for listening tonight. Laura, thank you so much, and I would love to have you on the show again.
It was such a pleasure. I can't believe it's over already. It went so fast.
I know. All of a sudden, I said, the hour's almost over. And I think that's what happens. It just, when you're passionate about something and it's just moving, it just, it goes by. Very powerful show, and I cannot wait to hear back from the listeners.
Me too. What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And everyone, good night and God bless.